Outdoorsman Radio Show is brought to you by Ellis Outdoors, LLC. This is Talk Radio 680 WCBM. Time now for the Outdoorsman Radio Show with your host, Alan Ellis. Hey, good morning, everyone. Alan Ellis here. This is the Outdoorsman Radio Show, where we talk about fishing and hunting and the great outdoors. And this hour, we're going to talk about fishing, in particular bass fishing, and to drill down even more, tidal bass fishing. And with us is our guest this morning, Dr. Joseph W. Love, Dr. Love, Ph.D., the tidal bass manager from Maryland Department of Natural Resources Fisheries Service. Good morning, Joe. How are you?
Good morning, Alan. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. How about yourself?
Well, I'm good. I'm waking up.
Yeah, that's a good thing.
Yeah, that's right. I've got a cup of coffee in front of me, so that's going to kickstart things here in a second.
Good. Glad to hear it. Glad to hear it. So overall, how's our bass fishing here in Maryland, top to bottom, left to right, you name it?
Overall, not too bad. The Upper Bay fishery's doing pretty doggone good. I've gotten a lot of good compliments from anglers. They've been catching big fish, which is pretty typical for the Upper Bay. They've been pretty satisfied. The reproduction up that way looks like it's getting better. Mm-hmm. So that's good news. And folks are starting to see some young bass over the flats. So
that's a good thing.
All that, you know, projects for pretty decent fishery down the road, I think.
As much as that region is fished, it's amazing that we have that kind of recruitment. That's for sure.
You're absolutely right, and a lot of people do enjoy fishing that area, non-residents and residents alike. So I'm glad that we have a good fishery for them.
We have a great fishery, but it's hammered by
it is
on. I mean, 4 days a week, there's multiple tournaments on that Susquehanna Flats. And it's a large area. Thank God it's a big area. It's like it's like Okeechobee up there.
And, it is.
And those fish have plenty of places to hide in the abundant grass now that they didn't have earlier. But they still orient to the shoreline. And anybody who has any kind of bass fishing or tournament experience up there knows where they can go and pick off fish week after week and day after day.
And that's right.
And it just, it's, you know, it's a year round tournament fishery. And what does that do, you know, during the spawn? Tell me about that.
Well, you know, there's been a lot of folks who have looked into the effect of fishing, during the spawning season. And, you know, in Maryland, we do allow fishing in tidal rivers, we allow possession during
right.
the tide, right, in the tidal rivers during the spawning season. And while we don't have a whole lot of folks harvesting fish, you know, we have a lot of folks who possess the fish, bring them to a weigh-in site, pull them off their nest. And really, that becomes a problem when the population is so small that pulling those males off the nest really kind of creates this large-scale nest failure effect. And luckily, you know, despite the number of tournaments, tournament anglers fishing the Potomac in the Upper Bay, we haven't reached that point where there's been this large number, this large fraction of nest failure, at least not related to anglers.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, you know, it's likely that when an angler pulls a bass off a nest, and then moves that bass around, that nest is going to fail. That's absolutely the case.
What about catch and release? Like, some of these anglers do on some of the reservoirs where they'll catch the fish and release it immediately and it goes back to the bed.
Right. There's still a chance that that nest can fail. Part of that depends on how far along them young are. Mm-hmm. You know, if they're pretty far along, a male may choose to abandon the nest, thinking that, you know, those offspring can fend for themselves.
Right.
If the male's pulled off the nest, you know, they take pictures of the fish, and it takes a while for them to get back to the water.
Right.
Might opt to abandon the nest. And if there are a lot of predators in the area, and the bass knows that because
sure.
he's been guarding that nest.
Yep.
If there are a lot of predators in the area and there's not a lot of structure, then he may abandon the nest thinking that the offspring are now eaten. Because it doesn't take too long, you know.
Yeah, sure.
If there are a lot of fish, a lot of predators around, it doesn't take too long for those young to get picked off.
Exactly.
So there's still a chance.
Okay.
But right. it's you know, nest failure seems to be a bit more common, though, when that fish is pulled off the nest.
And taken and weighed in somewhere.
Right.
Yeah.
Trucked away.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
And then not released right back to the same area at all. I mean, it's just, you know, let's go to the weigh-in station or whatever that is, and then the fish are all dumped in one spot, and I'm sure some of those fish may find their way back to the nest, but, you know, what's the likelihood, you know?
Yeah, right. In the upper bay, it's tough. You know, we have anglers fishing places like Middle or Sassafras, and they're bringing their fish up to the upper bay to head northeast, maybe over tiding. There's no way those fish are making it back to the
right,
nest.
Right, right, right.
So, you know, those nests. But like I said, unless there's a large fraction of those males moved off the nest, and a large fraction of nest failure, usually it's not going to affect our populations.
Right.
But we have seen here recently, as you mentioned, you know, a loss of grasses occurred after 2011 in both the Upper Bay and the Potomac River, and that was owed, we believe, to some tropical storms that moved in fall.
Right.
And sedimentation, siltation. So when we have that type of habitat loss and that type of siltation, you know, that affects nest failure as well.
Sure.
So, you know, when you add that on top of angling activity, it can be really tough to make sure that we have the same level of reproduction that we need to support the fishery.
Right.
So I think that's where our concerns have been in terms of reproduction. We did see a decline in the number of juveniles produced, and part of that's probably because of habitat loss. But luckily, the grasses are coming back. They have been over the past couple of years. The grasses on the Potomac River are
sure.
some of the best than they've ever been, from what I'm told. We've seen some really nice beds out there this year. So, you know, I'm optimistic.
Well, I can tell you that if this last tropical storm, Hermine, had turned inland and followed the same path that Agnes had followed with all the abundant rain and that type of thing. We didn't see a lot of it because most of it was offshore.
Yeah.
But it did create some havoc here over the Labor Day weekend a little bit, but not anything like it could have if it would hit us directly. But if that thing would have turned in and dumped all that water in the Susquehanna watershed and those gates would have had to been open, we'd have devastation again.
Boy, don't you know that? And I tell you, we were lucky because especially at this time in the fishery, you know, where we're trying to get some recovery, especially in a place like the Potomac, you know, something like that, if it would have hurt those grass beds,
yep.
we would have been in far worse shape.
Sure.
So we were really lucky.
Yes,
you know?
Indeed. Yep.
Yep.
So, okay, so you switched on me from the we were talking about, I did ask you top to bottom, north to south, and you went to the Potomac. And said that you're seeing some good indications there that the Potomac fisheries looking at perhaps a comeback. What you know back in the 80s, I guess they were touting this Potomac River fishery as you know the best in the country, and on through the 90s it went, and then here in the last few years it's kind of waned as far as. Production and that type of thing. You guys had to take a real close look at it on the tournament, angle. And, you know, you had some restrictions in place that people were not happy about. But, you know, you're not out there to necessarily placate the tournament angler. You're there to take care of the fishery. So tell us a little bit about the rise and fall of the Potomac, and what's been put in place.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you nailed it on the head there. The fishery on the Potomac was pretty good, and then even up to 2009, 2010, we were having anglers reporting some of the best fishing that they've had. The grass beds were really expansive at that time, and it was still listed in the top 100 for Bassmaster.
Mm-hmm.
So in the top 100 lakes in the country. And we were pretty proud of that.
Sure.
And we saw that change. Anglers began complaining that they weren't catching the fish any longer. And now, every year, of course, we get anglers who say, well, we can't catch fish. But
right.
When we start to get a lot of anglers, when we start to get tournament anglers and recreational anglers and guides all saying the same thing, that tends to mean something. And then
yeah.
We see Bassmaster pull the Potomac off the top 100. And that means something. And then we start to see in our own fishery independent electrofishing data, we start to see a decline in our catch. All of those things tend to point to a problem on the Potomac.
Mm-hmm.
And so we recognized that we had to do something. So we began, taking some efforts toward stocking the river. We took some efforts toward education, awareness, developing best management practices. But we hadn't taken an approach to really restrict fishing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's where anglers, started to pep up a little bit, because that was something that could affect them. So earlier this year, we decided to try and take that, or the department wanted to take that approach.
Mm-hmm.
So they ended up, we had some stakeholder input, but ultimately, internally, the department decided to establish some restriction on the number of large fish that were 15 inches or bigger coming into the weigh-in scale. And part of that's because, based on my observations when I've been out on release boats, as well as observations that have been reported to me from other folks,
mm-hmm.
These big fish, they get hit hard. They have a higher demand for oxygen, and during a fishing day, that level of oxygen can be stressed in the live well, or it can be stressed during the weigh-in procedure. And those bigger fish oftentimes are females. They're slower growing than the males. And our goal is to try and protect some of those bigger fish in the fishery. So we decided to, try and limit possession of those larger fish. And as part of that process, we got feedback from tournament directors as well. And, they were saying, well, look, we've got all these standards in place to try and protect those big fish, and we want you to take that into consideration. And so the department did. They said, you guys are correct. There are a lot of good things that a lot of you guys are doing to try and keep those big fish alive. So what we're going to start doing is providing a waiver for some of these tournament directors who have the infrastructure in place to keep those big fish alive, who have anglers, who have the equipment and the knowledge to keep those big fish alive. So we're going to start doing that. And that's where the department is right now. So they set up a period between June 16th and the end of October, whereby tournaments that are fishing in that time period are either going to be restricted to, they have a 5-fish limit, 12-inch minimum, but they can only bring in one fish that's 15 inches or bigger. Now, tournament directors are able to apply for a waiver, and they have to follow a series of special conditions. And based on my experience this year, every single tournament director that I know of has applied for those special conditions, has applied for that waiver.
I'm shocked.
And,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And we've seen some really nice, I think, positive benefits here in terms of, well, one, got people talking about whether or not there's a problem on the Potomac and then what we can do about it.
Right.
You know, whether there's a problem in the Upper Bay or will there be a problem in the Upper Bay? And then secondly, what better things can we do as, you know, a group of anglers to help protect this fishery? And, you know, we saw, for example, there's a weigh-in facility up at Anchor Marina that got developed this year because
right.
of some initiative of Chester County Bassmasters. Department helped out. Anchor Marine facilitated it and popped up some money for some of the equipment as well. So, you know, we're starting to, we saw some of that stuff happen, and that was really good because that helps
sure.
Protect those larger fish too. But, you know, we got a lot of negative feedback because, you know, we weren't focusing attention on other issues such as the harvest anglers or recreational anglers or, you know, some of these other issues that may be affecting the bass fishery.
Yeah.
So the department may be considering a regulation that would affect all anglers.
Hang on right there. Let's leave it as a cliffhanger.
Sure.
While we take a break. And remember where we were there, that you're considering a regulation that could affect all anglers. So let me tell our friends about Clyde's Pork Chop. Clyde's is at 2307 Hammonds Ferry Road in Lansdowne. We're into the early migratory bird season, like the dove, and we've got some early season goose, resident goose seasons out there right now. And I'd like to point to a couple shotguns for you. If you like the pump action shotgun, it's the BPS pump. Comes in 410. If you like to shoot a light caliber or light gauge for doves or something like that, 28-20. Those are your lighter gauges. If you want to step up to 16, 12, and 10 gauge, you can do that too, all with the BPS pump. It's a very BPS pump. It's a very versatile shotgun. And if you like pump action deer hunting shotgun, 12 and 20 gauge rifle barrel deer models, good grief, I can't read this morning, are available in the Browning BPS pump at Clyde Sports Shop. Comes in a nice Mossy Oak breakup infinity camo finish, and you'll like the features of that firearm. Same way with the A5. It's the most reliable, fastest cycling, best balanced, and softest shooting recoil-operated auto loader right here on planet Earth. Mossy Oak Shadowgrass Blades DuraTouch Camo, fiber optic front sight, humpback receiver, very nicely balanced, recoil-operated kinematic drive system. Yeah, the recoil, not the gas. And it's an autoloader shotgun with a 100,000-rounder five-year guarantee. See both these fine firearms at Clyde Sports Shop and get ready for the season. 2307 Hammonds Ferry Road in Lansdowne, just off Beltway, exit number 9. That phone number, 410-242-6108. 410-242-6108. Hey, my buddy Denny Stauffer up in Hagerstown, he's having his sportsman's auction with all kinds of firearms and hunting equipment and fishing equipment and all that type of stuff. That's Saturday, October 8th at 10 a.m. Leadersburg Pike, 21140 Leadersburg Pike in Hagerstown, Maryland. He's now accepting consignment. He's reaching out through me to you to see if you guys have anything and gals have anything that you'd like to sell. Your firearms, ammunition, hunting supplies, bows, fishing gear, hunting clothing, fishing gear. Turn your extra items into cash. All you have to do is call Denny at 301-791-6896. 301-791-6896. Or email Denny at stauffersauctionco.com and talk with Denny Stauffer. He's more than glad to and welcome to in your call. Bring a friend to the auction on October 8th. It's www.stauffersauctionco.com. www.stauffersauctionco.com. Attention, gun owners, hunters, and shooters. Hafer's Gunsmithing in Hagerstown, Maryland is your one-stop gun shop for sales, service, and training. Large selection of new and used guns? Hafer'sGuns.com. Large selection of ammo and reloading? Hafer'sGuns.com. Repairs, parts, custom gunsmithing? HafersGuns.com. Class 3 firearms, HafersGuns.com. Check out their extensive 1,600-square-foot showroom. Easy access from Interstates 81 and 70. Hafer's Gunsmithing on the web at HafersGuns.com or on Facebook at Hafer's Gunsmithing, 240-347-4906. Above precision, beyond accurate. And while you're at Hafer's Gunsmithing, see a redneck blind on display. Redneck blinds are the best deer blinds on the planet. Do you need a blind for the field edge, deep in the woods, or on the marsh? Choose Redneck Blinds. They're built to last. Redneck's fiberglass hunting blinds, new soft side hunting blind, and the hay bale blinds provide great visibility and shot angles for your bow, gun, and crossbow hunting. Stephen House is your Maryland Redneck Blinds dealer. Check the Redneck Blind website, then call Stephen at 301-331-2500. Alan Ellis here for Catonsville Linex and Bay Linex of Glen Burnie spray-on bedliners. You know, Linex spray-on bedliners are rated number one and carry a nationwide lifetime warranty. A Linex spray-on bedliner completely seals out water, meaning no rust. Your tools and your tackle, crabbing, and hunting gear can't hurt your truck bed. Choose the Linex premium bedliner that looks great and offers UV protection or the Linex Extra with Kevlar and paint match. And Catonsville Linex and Bay Linex now offer truck gear, the toughest accessories for your trucks. Step bars, tonneau covers, floor liners, grill guards, fender flares, and much more. These guys provide the best protection for your truck. Protect your investment, your pickup truck, like I did with a Linex bedliner and truck gear accessories. Catonsville Linex, located at 5617 Baltimore National Pike, inside Beltway Exit 15A. Call 410-455-0800. That's 410-455-0800. Bay Linex of Glen Burnie, located at 201 Wholesome Way in Glen Burnie. Call 410-789-0199. That's 410-789-0199. Nothing is more frustrating than a dead battery. When your truck won't start or your boat or ATV leaves you stranded far from home, that's not good. The solution is Battery Warehouse. Not only does Battery Warehouse provide batteries for your car or truck, you can find marine batteries for cranking or trolling, ATV batteries, tractor batteries, motorcycle batteries, and batteries for all outdoors equipment. Did you know Battery Warehouse has batteries for wild game feeders, dog collars, cell phones, predator calls, and trail cameras? How about your video camera? Or if you tow your boat or trailer, your trailer brake control battery? Any battery you need. With 10 locations in Central Maryland, there's a Battery Warehouse convenient to you. Bel Air, Frederick, Cockeysville, Glen Burnie, Dundalk, Hagerstown, Westminster, Eldersburg, Parkville, and Woodlawn. Visit BatteryWarehouseMaryland.com online for the phone numbers and more information. When you need a hot flash, get to the Battery Warehouse near you.
If you're a working man and your truck breaks down, you only need to know one repair shop, W&W Tire and Auto Service in Finksburg. They built your reputation on getting you in, fixed, and out the door quickly, efficiently, and at a very competitive price. Bridgestone and Firestone tires for pickups, SUVs, and commercial vehicles, large trucks, motorhomes, even diesel engines are no problem. W&W Tire and Auto Service on Route 140, 3233 Baltimore Boulevard in Finksburg. Just look for that big American flag. Call for an appointment, 410-833-8410, W&W Tire and Auto.
Start your day with Sean and Frank, Maryland's wake-up call. Weekdays 5 to 9 a.m. on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
At the tackle shop, I got a charge account running up nonstop. They ought to give me my own parking spot. I can't fit another plug in my tackle box. It's always under construction for all my weapons of mass destruction. I got buds, baits, and Zara spooks, pumpkin seeds, and flukes, booyah, crawfish jigs. I got a 7-foot flipper stick, all the soft plastics to hook one on a Texas rig. My wife stays on me and my banker just told me that he's working on a tax deduction for all the money I'm dropping on my weapons of mass destruction.
There he goes, weapons of mass destruction. Back with Dr. Joe Love. Joe, where do you call home?
What's that?
Where do you call home?
Well, I live in Lanham, Maryland.
Lanham, okay.
Now, so it's out here near D.C.
Yep.
But I did live in Salisbury since 2004.
Right.
I'm pretty familiar with the Eastern Shore as well.
I got you. So you're familiar with all the tidal rivers over there, down in the Nanticoke and the Pocomoke and all the other oaks, huh?
Yeah. I like to stomp around a lot of them. That's true. Yeah.
You like to hunt as well?
Well, no, I'm not much of a hunter. I did try it. I'm in bad shot, so I never picked that up again. I'm more of an angler myself.
I got you.
I tend to gravitate toward tackle and line.
Gotcha. You got that lower Eastern Shore kind of way of talking, you know, I mean, you know, I'm thinking this guy's from southern Eastern Shore somewhere down around Salisbury area. So yeah, you've got that little twang with you there.
I used to come. So I grew up in Louisiana though. So I'm a Marylander.
Man, that okay.
I'm a Southerner.
I didn't pick up the Louisiana part, but the southern lower Eastern Shore, I did pick that up a little bit. So you've adapted well, anyway. All right,
that's
we left
good.
Our listeners with a cliffhanger. We are considering a regulation that,
well, it will potentially extend what we're doing now. With that possession restriction and special conditions to the end of February. So it would go from June 16th to the end of February.
Ooh.
What it essentially does is it would require or would limit possession of 15-inch or bigger fish to one per person unless the angler had a waiver from the state. And the way that they would receive a waiver from the state would be if their tournament director began adhering to these, as I mentioned, these special conditions that are associated with their permit.
Okay.
So what that does, it's really a subtle change, but what it does is it essentially limits harvest of big fish by people who are harvesting bass. To one per person, one that's 15 inches or better. Now they're more than welcome to keep fish that have a 12 inch minimum, so they can still maintain their creel of five with a 12 inch minimum, but they're only allowed
one over 15. Makes sense.
Yeah, I mean,
you're not going to, you know, those big bass are not that good to eat anyway. You know, I mean, they really are not. I mean, I used to catch them and eat them when I was a kid, but a bass over 15 inches was rare then. But, you know, the smaller fish aren't bad, but there's better fish in the sea to eat, that's for sure.
Yeah, I think so. And I think one of the, you know, we discussed the issue of stockpiling with some of our stakeholders. And one of the concerns was that, you know, as a result of, you know, some tournament activity, the fish are getting stockpiled in areas like Mattawoman Creek or like the Upper Northeast River. And the reality is, I mean, they're going to leave the area after about a week, maybe up to a month, but they're going to be in that area for a little while.
Mm-hmm.
And during that time, there are people who are fishing those fish.
Yep.
And they have definitely a right to fish those fish.
No question.
But what they're doing is they're fishing big fish that are released as a result of this tournament. So they're not fishing a natural population.
Right, exactly.
Existed, right?
Right. I mean, you know, Ken Cook won the, 1991 Bassmasters Classic here in Baltimore?
Baltimore.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, fishing that upper bay. And, you know, he knew where the release sites were. I mean, why wouldn't you take advantage of that?
Absolutely.
You know, and I mean, there was no question about it. He did his homework. He did his due diligence. He said, "Where do you guys release your fish in these tournaments?" And they said, "Right over here at the boat dock." And Ken fished that area and did very well there. Not that he did anything wrong. He did what any smart angler would do, and he went home with the big prize.
Absolutely. Right.
You know,
and you know, and that's. You know, for the majority of catch and release anglers, I mean, that's what we have out there a lot, catch and release anglers. They're going to release their fish.
Sure.
But, you know, for some folks, they're harvesting the animals and they're taking those home. And our point is that, you know, the population size on the Potomac may have shrank a bit because we've had poor levels of recruitment, reproduction over the past 4 or 5 years. So, you know, with a smaller population, we really need to focus on protecting some bigger fish from harvest. So that's one side of it. But the other side of it is that it would, this regulation would essentially require kind of a baseline standard by which all tournaments would operate, not just big ones, but all of them. And those baseline standards, you know, while they are used in Florida, places like California, while they're supported and in fact written about by folks at BASS, we don't have a requirement for tournaments to use them here. So, you know, we're trying to take more of a proactive approach. I tell you, for years I've been hearing people talk about, you know, well, that guy over there fishing that tournament's really disrespecting the fish, or that guy over there, they're really having a crappy weigh-in. In fact, this year I got complaints about tournaments fishing on the Virginia side of the river and how they had on the Potomac, and how they were, you know, essentially disrespecting the fish and potentially causing greater levels of mortality. And all of that is, you know, infrastructure and education.
Sure.
And I tell you, as long as BASS has had their standards out, 20 years, something like that,
yep,
we've found that not everyone's using them. And part of this, you know, potential regulation would be to establish those standards. Now, that I admit, there's been a lot of contention, a lot of discussion about whether small clubs would be able to meet those standards or not.
Right.
And, you know, we've done our best over the past 6 months to talk with those clubs and see how we can, you know, work together on a solution. Now we have a stakeholder group that was appointed by Sport Fish Commission, and they are meeting on the 13th. So they're meeting next week, as a matter of fact, to not only look at these special conditions, but also to vote upon a recommendation on having catch and return or closed areas in the Potomac and the Upper Bay areas. So, you know, we have this input from 13 members of that stakeholder group, and hopefully some of that will help guide the department in how we can do a better job, a better service of, you know, providing special conditions that these small clubs can operate under. So we're keeping those lines of communication open. We want the feedback, we want the information, but we all want to protect the resource. So we do have those standards that are aimed at protecting the resource. And I'll be fair, a lot of them are already performed by anglers out on the water. I see it all the time, the care, the money they've put into protecting those fish. You know, we just want to make sure that that is an even standard applied
right to
everyone.
Got it.
Not just a few.
So you're actually convening a new advisory committee, is that what you're telling me? A brand new one? I mean, any of the old members on it? I'm thinking about Sport Fish Advisory. I'm thinking about Tidal Fish Advisory. You're convening a new black. Yeah.
I know it gets confusing. So we've got.
You got a black bass advisory committee now, subcommittee.
It's actually appointed by our Sport Fish Commission. It's basically a technical work group that's dedicated to addressing black bass issues in
okay.
the state.
I have a question for you.
Sure.
Okay. A couple of weeks ago, we, and this is way off the subject, but I just want to get your thoughts on it, since you're a title guy. A couple of weeks ago, we addressed an issue, a pending regulation change that will allow what I call long lining in the Chesapeake Bay. 1,200-foot lines with unlimited hooks, 5-aught circle hooks, no live bait allowed in the tributaries and in the upper bay, not in the main stem of the bay, but any of the rivers and that type of thing, ostensibly for catfishing, blue catfish.
Mm-hmm.
I just throwing it out there. And I know that they're using this technique on the Potomac right now for the blue cats.
Mm-hmm.
And we've never heard from anybody that the blue cats are being harmful to the black bass population. We've heard that they eat gizzard shad and white perch primarily, and shad and herring and that type of thing. But two questions, I guess, in the one. Are the blue cats predating on the largemouth bass in the Potomac River? And number two, what are your thoughts on this longline regulation?
Well, the first answer,
if you can answer.
Yeah, I can tell you that, you know, blue cats are not preying on bass.
We've okay.
got, people who have done that gut work, and I haven't seen any data supporting that.
Okay.
The
getting to eat the snakeheads would be a win-win, wouldn't it?
In fact, blue cats have been known to eat a snakehead or two. They have done that.
Mm-hmm.
But there haven't been any reports of them eating bass.
Right.
And to the second on, you know, my opinion of long lining, you know, I don't honestly know what the department's opinion is on that, because that's not in my wheelhouse.
Right. Well, I can
focus on tidal bass.
Yep.
You know, I get my opinion would be, though, of course, we're interested in any good technology that
right.
can efficiently harvest some of these invasives like blue catfish. I think they just want to, you know, ensure that bycatch would be minimized and not, you know, killed. They don't want to, you know, kill a bunch of other species as a result of this activity.
Yeah, I can hardly see, you know, unlimited 1,200 foot long lines in the tributaries. I can baited with cut alewife. I could hardly see any rockfish being caught in those at all. I would doubt that would ever happen.
Is that right?
No, I'm being facetious. Good
yeah,
God, I think
okay.
it's horrible. Quite frankly,
I was gonna say, well, okay.
Jeez. So.
Yeah, well, that would be a legitimate concern.
Yeah.
Like, you know, there are plenty of people out there who are catching blue catfish in, you know, a few different ways.
Sure.
And I think that there are a lot of blue catfish out there to be caught, but whether or not, you know, I mean, who knows? Maybe they could figure out a good way of doing long lining. I don't know.
Well, it looks like it's full speed ahead right now.
You know, yeah,
it does. I mean, it just doesn't. There's no. You know, not putting the genie back in the bottle at the moment. So
well, now I'll say they've got, like I said, they've got a sport fish and tidal fish advisory commission, and if the department set those up specifically as mechanisms to get public input into departmental processes.
I know that. Yep.
Right. So
yep. They did their scoping. That's right.
Yeah.
And the time period that ended August 28th. I don't know what the Sport Fish Advisory Committee did. I don't know what the Tidal Fish Advisory Committee did. It just didn't seem like there was a whole lot of feedback on this. And there wasn't a whole lot of, as usual, sharing with the sport fish and tidal fish advisory constituencies. I mean, these guys, I don't know if they didn't understand it, if they didn't share it with their people, or what the deal was on that. But I mean, I, when I found out about it and learned about it, it's like, wait a minute, this doesn't
yeah.
sound like a very nice thing to do. And by that point, the comment period was done, you know?
Well, we got, you know,
I mean, I understand that you guys do, you know, the public disclosure, and you have the weigh in on the public opinion and that type of thing. I get all that. I do.
Mm-hmm.
But my pick isn't necessarily with the department per se. It's more with the members of the advisory committees that don't follow up with their own organizations that they represent.
Yeah, and I'd say if that was a concern, I would suggest contacting the chair of the commission, at least for sport fish, I believe that's Goldsboro.
Right.
And just contact them and let them know your concern. And I bring that up because we had a similar issue with the black bass subcommittee after they voted on this potentially proposed regulation that I was just referring to.
Yeah.
And there were people out there who were saying that the committee didn't discuss enough about the issue
right
before they voted on it. And, you know, I think that kind of information can be raised to the chair, and the chair can, you know,
right,
effectively address it at the meeting.
Right, right. Well, we'll see what we can do. Maybe I'll reach out to Bill and see what he does, see what he says.
Yeah. But
very nice. All right. I'm sorry I took you off track there, but I had to get that in. So.
No, I understand.
Yeah. So we covered the slot limit deal and the required handling practices by these deals that have been in effect for years and are not necessarily being adhered to by these tournament anglers. The new Black Bass Advisory Subcommittee, we talked about that. We're going to take another break, and then we're going to talk about Smoots Bay, and we're going to talk about the possibility of off-limits areas in Maryland. Good with that, Joe?
Yeah, that sounds great.
Okay, let's do that. Let me get through this break, and then we'll get right back to you. Won't be much time left. So, all right, listen, everybody. Stauffer's Auction Company, my buddy Denny Stauffer up there in Hagerstown, is having his annual sportsman's auction. And I call him my buddy because I've been on the, I've been with Denny at different auctions, different events where he's been the auctioneer and that type of thing. And, you know, we've gotten to know each other a little bit. But he's now accepting consignments for his October 8th auction. The address is 21140 Leadersburg Pike in Hagerstown. He wants you to call him and tell him that you want cash for your stuff, your firearms, your ammunition, your hunting supplies, your bows, your fishing gear, your clothing. Turn your extra items into cash. Give Denny a call. Here's the number, 301-791-6896, or email Denny, D-E-N-N-Y, at stauffersauctionco.com and talk with Denny. Bring a friend to the auction. You'll check it out all online at stauffersauctionco.com. Stauffers, S-T-O-U-F-F-E-R-S, auctionco.com. Hey, one more time for Clyde Sports Shop. Now, we talked about the Browning firearms, and for those of you getting ready for hunting season, of course, they have the greatest selection of Browning firearms and everything that you could need, want, or imagine. They do scope mounting and bore sighting and gunsmithing. But I want to tell you about their fishing supplies. Fall fishing and fall crabbing is going to be great. If you need anything and everything for any type of fall fishing, whether it's rockfish, breaking fish, whether it's bass, whether it's panfish, whatever, Clyde Sports Shop has everything you need, including live bait. If you're a crabber, they've got the traps, the pots, the trot lines, the steamers, you name it, Clyde Sports Shop has it. Make sure you check them out. You can check them out online at clydesports.com. Or stop by. A friend of mine stopped by the other day, never been in there. He said, man, that's a great store. I said, yeah, that's what I've been telling people. 2307 Hammonds Ferry Road in Lansdowne, just off Beltway, exit 9, 410-242-6108 is the phone number. If you're a fisherman, fishing hotline, 410-247-3474, 247-FISH for Clyde Sports Shop. Redneck blinds are the best deer blinds on the planet. Do you need a blind for the field edge, deep in the woods, or on the marsh? Choose Redneck Blinds. They're built to last. Redneck's fiberglass hunting blinds, new soft side hunting blind, and the hay bale blinds provide great visibility and shot angles for your bow, gun, and crossbow hunting. Stephen House is your Maryland Redneck Blinds dealer. Check the Redneck Blind website, then call Stephen at 301-331-2500. You can see a Redneck Blind on display at Hafer's Gunsmithing in Hagerstown. Gun owners, hunters, and shooters, Hafer's Gunsmithing in Hagerstown, Maryland is your one-stop gun shop for sales, service, and training. Large selection of new and used guns, hafersguns.com. Large selection of ammo and reloading, hafersguns.com. Repairs, parts, or custom gunsmithing, hafersguns.com. Class 3 firearms, hafersguns.com. Check out their extensive 1,600-square-foot showroom, easy access from Interstates 81 and 70. Hafer's Gunsmithing, on the web at hafersguns.com or on Facebook at Hafer's Gunsmithing, 240-347-4906, above precision, beyond accurate. Nothing is more frustrating than a dead battery. When your truck won't start or your boat or ATV leaves you stranded far from home, that's not good. The solution is Battery Warehouse. Not only does Battery Warehouse provide batteries for your car or truck, you can find marine batteries for cranking or trolling, ATV batteries, tractor batteries, motorcycle batteries, and batteries for all outdoors equipment. Did you know Battery Warehouse has batteries for wild game feeders, dog collars, cell phones, predator calls, and trail cameras? How about your video camera? Or if you tow your boat or trailer, your trailer brake control battery? Any battery you need. With 10 locations in Central Maryland, there's a Battery Warehouse convenient to you. Bel Air, Frederick, Cockeysville, Glen Burnie, Dundalk, Hagerstown, Westminster, Eldersburg, Parkville, and Woodlawn. Visit BatteryWarehouseMaryland.com online for the phone numbers and more information. When you need a hot flash, get to the Battery Warehouse near you. Hey, Alan Ellis here for Bay Linex of Glen Burnie and Catonsville Linex Spray-On Bedliners. You know Linex Spray-On Bedliners are rated number one, and they carry a nationwide lifetime warranty. A Linex Spray-On Bedliner completely seals out water, meaning no rust. Your tools, your tackle, your crabbing and hunting gear can't hurt your truck bed. Choose the Linex Premium Bedliner that looks great and offers UV protection, or the Linex Extra with Kevlar and paint match. You know what? Bay Linex and Catonsville Linex now offer truck gear, the toughest accessories for your truck. Step bars, tonneau covers, floor liners, grill guards, fender flares, and much more. These guys provide the best protection for your truck. Protect your investment, your pickup truck like I did, the Linex Bedliner, and truck gear accessories. Bay Linex of Glen Burnie is located at 201 Wholesome Way in Glen Burnie. Of course, call 410-789-0199. That's 410-789-0199. Catonsville Linex, located 5617 Baltimore National Pike, inside Beltway Exit 15A. Call 410-455-0800. 410-455-0800.
W&W Tire and Auto Service in Finksburg has taken care of my trucks for over 25 years. Anything from a simple oil change to extensive engine work, brakes, tune-ups, everything, their motto is, we do it. Bridgestone and Firestone tires for pickups, SUVs, and commercial vehicles. Large trucks, motorhomes, even diesel engines are no problem. W&W Tire and Auto Service on Route 140, 3233 Baltimore Boulevard in Finksburg. Look for the big American flag. Call for an appointment, 410-833-8410, W&W Tire and Auto.
This is Les Consolving. Join me every Sunday night, 10 to 1, for Uninhibited Radio on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
All right, we're back with Dr. Joe Love from Maryland Department of Natural Resources. Joe, we talked a lot about bass fishing and some future regulations. Let's talk a little bit about this subject that you sent to me, in off-limits areas in Maryland's tidewater and a possible, I think we covered the possible regulation, but what about the off-limits deal?
Well, yeah, so just quick, we've got our group, our task force, our subcommittee meeting on the 13th to discuss potentially one or two off-limits areas in the Potomac River, one or two areas in the Upper Bay. Now, this is a concept we've been talking about for about 2 or 3 years. A lot of anglers have expressed interest in having an off-limits area to protect spawning fish.
Right.
They look to Pennsylvania and they say, hey, it's an off-limits, you know, if they have an off-limits season or a no-target season. They look to our non-tidal waters and say, hey, look, we've got a no possession in Maryland. What's going on with tidal rivers? So our subcommittee on the 13th is going to be voting on some of these management options that the department's provided, and they include catch and return areas. They include no target areas. One of the options is even a statewide, in tidal water, statewide catch and return. So they're going to be taking a look at those options this on the 13th, and they're going to vote on them. And that's going to ultimately become a recommendation that heads up to the secretary. The department's going to take a look at what that recommendation is, and they might very well propose to have one or two catch and return or no target areas,
right?
Depending on what the subcommittee ultimately recommends.
Got it.
So it's going to be a big change for bass.
Yeah, it sounds like it. It sounds like it. Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
But stay tuned. We haven't proposed anything.
Right. Well, when you propose it, let's hear back from you. Smoots Bay Reef Project.
Yeah, so I'm really excited about this. If We're going to, if anyone knows where the National Harbor is over there by the Woodrow Wilson Bridge, we are going to be looking for volunteers Friday, Saturday, and Sunday of next week to help build some mini reef balls. And we're going to put these reef balls into Smoots Bay in October after the concrete cures. And those balls are meant to provide habitat for bass in historically an important nursery area in the Potomac River, in the tidal Potomac River. So we are looking for people, and if they're interested in volunteering, they can go to Chesapeake Bay Foundation's website on the events page and sign up just online. We're looking for about 20 people per day. But I'm pretty excited about the project. It's something that National Harbor's contributed funds and time and materials for. The department, our Maryland Artificial Reef Initiative, the Maryland Bass Nation is a part of it, and they found some money for this project. So we have, and of course the Chesapeake Bay Foundation is providing the molds and the expertise and the time. So it's going to be a great partnership. We're going to be on site Friday morning, starting Friday morning at 9. And if people are interested in how to pour concrete into a reef ball, they're more welcome to come out. And perhaps in October, if they're interested in coming out to help deploy these reef balls, they can contact me directly, and we can make that happen.
Okay.
But it's going to be the first reef in tidal freshwater like this for bass.
Great.
Give me that date
again, the first date you gave us.
It's going to be the 16th, 17th, and 18th.
Okay.
September.
Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Okay.
Friday, Saturday, Sunday
and,
next week.
And where is it again?
It's at the National Harbor.
National Harbor. Okay. That's
Harbor
in D.C. Okay.
Yeah.
Got it. There, that big restoration, big reformation down there at the National Harbor. All kinds of stuff going on down there.
All kinds of stuff. We've got 80 reef balls and submerged wood going into the upper part of Smoots Bay there, the northern part of Smoots Bay. So,
nice.
You know, I'm really hopeful. That area lost some grass about 10 years ago, and it just never really recovered.
Right.
And I don't think it will. We don't think it will. And this is one way I think that we can address that concern. And,
got it.
You know, like I said, hopefully it'll help.
Stay tuned, Joe. We'll be talking to you, I'm sure.
All right, thanks a lot, Alan.
Thanks, buddy, and I appreciate you being with us today. Dr. Joseph Love, Ph.D., Maryland Department of Natural Resources, Tidal Bass Manager, Project Leader, and full of great information today, Joey. Thank you again for being here, and we will be talking to you in the future, I'm sure.
Yes, sir. You take care now.
All right, buddy. Thank you.
Bye.
There's the music. That means...